Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I've the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009 when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013, and you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book Vultures Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it too. I encourage you to listen.
And we're back, folks, with the live edition of Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. It has been a while. It's been almost 2 weeks now since we last had an edition of Carson's Corner. And as you recall, the last episode of this show, which was on March 5th, earlier this month, I was going for my residency in Atlanta, Georgia. And I told you that as soon as I finished broadcasting, I'd be driving 856 miles from New Jersey to Atlanta and then back again. And obviously, I made it okay, surprisingly, considering the fact that my car, its transmission is completely shot. Now, I got to tell you, I really didn't think I was going to make it back there, but I had no choice. You know, I wanted to fly, but I couldn't afford the plane fare, the plane ticket, round-trip ticket. I wanted to rent the car, but I couldn't really afford to do that, so my only other option was to take my car. And that's, you know, what we find in America is that when you don't have money for things, your choices are obviously far and few between, and that's what rich people can't understand. And you know, other individuals that subscribe to more objective ideology. But in any event, I actually made it to and from Atlanta. On the way back, I actually drove for 17 hours. I got lost coming into New Jersey, and I was so wired. I was just so tired of being behind the wheel that I was seeing things. I was like almost hallucinating, and I almost got pulled over. I attracted the attention of a Hightstown police officer who was following me for miles, and he didn't pull me over, and it was just I'm glad I didn't get pulled over. But it was just a daunting task, a daunting drive back from Atlanta. It just seemed like it just never ended, but I made it. And you know what? I'm so proud of my car that I want to keep my car. I want to eventually get a new transmission, which costs thousands of dollars, as anybody can understand. Anybody who knows cars understands just how much a transmission costs. And I owe it to my car to have that car for another 5 or 10 years. I've got almost 150,000 miles on it. And you know what? I guarantee you, if I put a new transmission in that car, I'll probably wind up getting another, 100,000 miles out of that car. That'd be great. I don't mind it. You know, I drove to and from California with that car. No problems. I drove to and from Atlanta with a bad transmission, and it still held up for me. I owe that car. Okay. Sometimes I get indecisive and I want to get a new car. And I went to a Honda dealership the other day, Hyundai dealership, and I got into an argument with the whole staff there, and I walked out and just, and then these people call me every single hour like a bunch of vultures, they're just slobbering all over me, because I wanted to get a car. And that's how it is at these car dealerships. And I hate going to buy a new car. It's just a terrible experience. At least for me, it's been. You're dealing with salespeople that are just, they don't care. They're all they care about is selling you a car, fast talking you, pressuring you into buying a car. And, I've had a lot of problems, but, at the end of the day, I'm going to wind up keeping my car, and I'm going to, it'd be beneficial to me just to bite the bullet and see if I can come up with the money to get a new transmission, because that's what I need. I need that car. I can't afford a payment. These car payments suffocate you. You end up spending thousands of dollars more for the car than it's worth because you have to finance the car. Nobody has the cash available to make an outright purchase. And it's just, with the economy the way it is, with the lack of money that's out there for individuals like us, this is what happens. And to top that all off, my bum roommate, and I emphasize bum, B-U-M. I have to use that in a pejorative term to describe him because he moved out. He can't afford to take care of himself. He's the most helpless person I've ever seen in my life. I mean, really, literally can do nothing for himself. He's one of the most pathetic people I've ever seen in my life. And he's out. He's practically out of here now, so now I have to find a new roommate, and it's just, it's one thing after another. And you people know that if you listen to this show for years and you know me, you understand that the financial situation I've been in ever since really my mother died in 2008 is just, from one crisis to the next because I don't make enough money. That's the bottom line. You don't make enough money, especially in an expensive state like New Jersey, you're going to find stuff like this. You're not going to be able to live, a decent life. And it goes way beyond personal choices and initiative and personal choices, personal responsibility. That's the crap that the elites feed out to us to make us accept the political system, the economic system. Oh, you're making bad choices. Well, you know what? You work at Walmart. In an economy, in a state where the unemployment is past national average and where the value of a dollar right now is down to what it was in 1966, the average income now for the average American has not increased with inflation. I mean, you want to grow up, you want to live in an America where you have vast income and wealth consolidation. Well, this is what you're going to get. You're going to get a society like this where, you know what, even someone like myself who is basically living a little bit above the poverty line with no money in the bank, but I have a job, I have a car, I have a roof over my head, I'm actually doing well compared to a lot of people in this country. and you look at the statistics, and we're going to, by the way, we're going to talk about David K. Johnson's new book, Divided. We've had David K. Johnson on the show before. We'd like to have him back on the show. But this book discusses the perils of inequality. And it's anything that David K. Johnson does is just stellar material. The guy is an absolute genius, and we loved having him on the show. I recommend all of his books, Fine Print, Perfectly Legal, Free Lunch. These are books that accurately describe how the economic system is being looted. You know, our tax system is being looted. Our corporate system is, you know, the corporations are built to loot, as Chuck Collins has said in his book, 99 to 1. And this is very, very important, because all of this, all of these facts and these figures and the current state of our economy, all of that plays a role into, you know, what type of life people like myself and others are living. And we understand, people that don't watch Fox News and don't listen to right-wing talk radio and are not dumbed down by, you know, millionaire hosts trying to tell you that, you know, it's all welfare, it's all poor people's fault, it's all the minorities' fault, it's all the immigrants' fault. You know, the same individuals that are sponsored by groups like the Chamber of Commerce and ALEC and other corporate groups that are the very groups that are responsible for making sure that you take home less and less and less while they take home more and more and more. We understand that in the United States of America, it's much more complicated than just attributing the nation's problems to individual initiative. Anybody, I think, that really wants to have an understanding of what's going on looks past that and assumes that most of us are responsible people. You know, we're not just lazy, you know, irresponsible people as depicted on the corporate-driven, corporate-owned media outlets. By and large, most of us are, you know, we do have a good head on our shoulders. We do have a good work ethic. We do have innovation. We do have goals. We do have initiatives. I don't know anybody that doesn't. I mean, even to the extent that I was talking about my roommate before, and describing him the way he is, he even has goals and he even has initiatives. He just has an alcohol problem, okay? And, you know, he just can't do anything for himself. He can't depend on himself. But people like my roommate, even if you want to, you know, omitting certain things about his childhood, omitting things about his family, and just taking him at face value, even if you want to say, okay, you know, Bob, your roommate is a screw-up, he's a loser, and he's responsible for his own situation in life. Okay, I'll give you that. That's fine. He's responsible for his own situation in life. Again, you know, taking it in an objective context. But you know what? People like him are far and few between. He does not represent the average person, you know, living above or in the poverty line, qualifying for food stamps, so on and so forth. Because careful analysis shows, and I've done the research on this, I can provide you the government reports, that, you know, less than 2% of people that are on unemployment are receiving benefits fraudulently. Okay, and that goes for all the welfare programs out there. So, you know, people are not cheating the system as you would be made to believe by watching the corporate media. And so the question is how is it that we're just becoming a nation of poor people? We're becoming a nation of paupers. Well, you know, I think if you look at David K. Johnson's work and others, Dean Baker, Tom Hartman, Robert Reich, who has a new documentary on Netflix that I'm going to watch. I bookmarked it. It's called Inequality for All. You know why Dr. Reich has to release this film? You know why he has to go on a campaign to highlight this? Is because this is omitted from the conversation. You know, the elites want you to believe that in the United States of America, if you're poor, problem in the wiring. It's a problem with you. it's not a problem with our economic system. You know, that does not get any type of analysis. It's always a problem with the individual because, after all, the United States of America is the freest country in the world. This is the land of opportunity, right? This is the lies that we tell ourselves. This is the lies. These are the lies that we allow the elites to tell us. And then, you know, you look at someone like Paul Ryan, and I hate this guy. I really do, because he's evil. What he represents is absolutely evil. He detests people that are poor. He hates minorities. This is the root of libertarianism. This is, you know, who Ayn Rand was, Milton Friedman. The individuals that provide the starting point for discussion in our country. Have you noticed that? That Paul Ryan in 2012, after losing with Mitt Romney, another disgusting human being as far as I'm concerned, another man who you can make an argument is a sociopath, this guy, even though he lost the election in 2012, he made a joke of himself during the campaign. He still serves as the starting point for negotiation when it comes to our economic policies. Have you noticed that? The elites love to highlight his economic plans. They love to highlight his budget point, his budget. And this is the starting point of negotiation. So we argue things when it comes to welfare, when it comes to poverty, you know, when it comes to government programs, when it comes to, you know, we argue it from the viewpoint practically of Paul Ryan. He is the standard barrier. He is someone that, you know, establishes discussion in America. His ideology, you know, libertarianism, objectivism, this contempt for the poor, that's where the discussion begins in our corporate media. It's absolutely disgusting. We don't hear from people like myself. We don't hear from people like Dr. Robert Reich. They are marginalized. They're on the outskirts of the discussion. Maybe once in a while you'll see an interview or you know, they'll you know, some progressive writer or something will publish an article, but it's far and few between. Paul Ryan and his ideology is the starting point for discussion here in America. Because his ideology, the libertarian ideology, suits the business interests of America. It suits the capital owners. And that's why we'll always keep on going back to it. That's why the Tea Party is still alive and well and thriving in the United States, because it benefits the very wealthy. It benefits the elites in our society. And as we've said before on this program, and I'll say it again, the media and the government represent elite interests in America. And that is the bottom line. I mean, this is virtually indisputable at this point. And so this is why you have a guy like Dr. Robert Reich, who genuinely cares about individuals that are in the same economic system as I am, who genuinely wants to highlight just how corrosive income and wealth inequality is for this country and other countries on the outskirts. This is what has him, you know, releasing a film about income inequality. It's just unbelievable. But you know what? This is why David K. Johnson's work is so important, is that he points out in his book, Divided, the perils of income inequality, the perils of inequality. I hope I'm getting it right. He points out, David K. Johnson, that from 2009 to 2011, the top 1% of income earners got 121% of the income gains, while the bottom 99% of income earners saw their income fall. He also notes that this is the most unequal developed nation in the world. Okay, now let me just tell you something here, okay? If somebody asks you, what is wrong with America? I mean, we can, you know, I could spend an hour, 2 hours telling you what's wrong with America, because there's a lot wrong with this country. In fact, I see more wrong than good. I see more bad country. In fact, you know, I mean, that this is, this could serve for another discussion at another time. But if it's one example that really illustrates all the way around just how bad this country is and just how upside down everything is and the problems with America. You know, I was watching Taxi Driver last night, the 1976 film with Robert De Niro, which I think he was nominated for an Academy Award for his role. And he's in the car. He's driving Senator Palatine, the politician, the senator, right? Who he fell in love with, this girl who was working for his campaign. And you know, the guy's trying to be polite to Travis. If you've seen the movie, that's great. If not, you know, you could sort of get a picture for what's going on here. And this guy Palatine asks Robert De Niro, "What's wrong with America?" Well, you know, I was thinking to myself, that's a very, very interesting question. Of course, it's a open-ended rhetorical question, but if I had to answer what is wrong with America, our tax code is a perfect illustration of what is wrong with America in just about every area, okay? Now, I mentioned from 2009 to 2011, the top 1% of income earners got 121% of the income gains. Now, how does that happen? You know, will we see much analysis of this in the corporate media? No, of course not. But I would submit to you that one of the main reasons why something like that is allowed to happen, where the top 1% of income earners, many of whom work in the finance industry, which has been liberated since Ronald Reagan and has become increasingly more volatile, as we've seen with the 2008 collapse, you could look at the 1987 SNL collapse and the stock market collapse. Our finance system is a ticking time bomb. You want to talk about weapons of mass destruction? Well, our financial institution, our financial industry is an economic weapon of mass destruction that can melt all of us down and will melt all of us down. It's only a matter of time. But the United States tax code is essentially a junket. It has been offshored. It has been hijacked by corporate interests of America. And as I've been saying on this show for years, and people like Dr. Robert Reich and others that I've mentioned in this broadcast, if you give the tax code over to special interests, then you're going to have a tax code that represents the interests of big business and very wealthy individuals as opposed to workers like you and I. You could look at the tax code. Look at the fact that our tax code is over 70,000 pages. You could look at who's writing our tax code, the laws, and just how regressive our tax code is when it comes to our wages, which most of Americans make their money through a paycheck or they make their money through a salary, which means the government takes out money from your paycheck before you get it. And so our tax code is being used by big business to make them more money and to make you poor. It is used by big business and very wealthy individuals and special interests to consolidate wealth upwards. And basically, you know, you can make an argument that it's used as a control mechanism to control all of us. Now, you could take any industry or take any area of our government, the court system, okay? Our federal judges in America, most federal judges are judges. They, by and large, have no kinship with American workers, okay? And if you look at the rulings that they administer, it's almost always in favor of big business. You can look at our Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, which has 9 unelected kings, a fascist Supreme Court that rules in favor of big business over 70% of the time, a fascist Supreme Court that will, as I predicted a few shows ago, will undermine public sector workers and unionization in the public sector, a Supreme Court that, you know, has essentially gutted key civil rights legislation that was designed to create equality among minority voters. You could look at, you know, the corporate sector. Look at the retail giants like Walmart and Target and others, and look at the policies concerning organized labor, which are undoubtedly crafted by these big businesses to form a system of labor control, which is what we have now, where workers in America are fighting with their hands tied behind their back. They're marginalized because our laws have been written and interpreted to benefit the capital owners. And so, you know, this is what you have now. You can look at our pharmaceutical industry, where the average American, this is unbelievable, but you can look this up. I don't make this stuff up. Everything I say on this program is sourced. It's documented. The average American spending $2,000 to subsidize the drug companies. Okay, you've got a massive amount of taxpayer-funded research that is being conducted at universities to benefit drug companies that are paying no taxes and are you know, inflating the price of drugs. And you look at something like Medicare, where thanks to the, you know, Medicare Part D bill, which was passed in 2013, led by Billy Talzin, the Republican House member who later went to work for Big Pharma after the passage of this bill. Or you can even look at a Democrat like Charlie Rangel, and you can look at his role in the passing of this legislation. So you can see this is, you know, not relegated to one party. Well, now, you know, the Veterans Administration and Medicare cannot bargain for prescription drugs. They have to pay an inflated price, and this costs the government billions and billions and billions of dollars. And who's ultimately going to pay for that? Well, it's going to be the seniors that are, you know, on Medicare and have to take prescription drugs, because Paul Ryan and his plan is the standard barrier. That is the starting point for negotiations when it comes to, you know, Medicare, where now it's a race to privatize Medicare. It's only a matter of time before Medicare is privatized, which would result in a greater inefficiency, because privatization over certain areas of the government, certain sectors of the economy, is based on waste and inefficiency. You know, so the tax code, and looking what has happened with the United States tax code, it spreads throughout other areas, and it's a perfect illustration of what is wrong with our country, because we, the people, are not in charge of the tax code. We, the people, are not in charge of the court system. We, the people, are not in charge of our trade policies. We, the people, are not in charge of our, you know, drug policies or just anything. We're not in charge. We've been circumvented. It is the corporate, you know, when you hear somebody, Ralph Nader talked about this, when you hear somebody say, oh, the government does this, the government does that, you need to tell them it's the corporate government. It's not a government of and by the people. It is a government of and by the corporations. And I'm telling you, folks, I'm telling you, we are all paying the price. I'm paying the price. You're paying the price. You're one of the 75% of Americans that are living paycheck to paycheck. You're one of the millions of Americans that you know, are one medical situation away from bankruptcy, where you have less than $1,000 saved up in the bank, well, you're paying the price for this. And it all stems from income inequality, the perils of inequality, okay? Because it's common sense. If you have 1% of the population that's getting all of the income growth and more, 121% of the income growth over 2 years, that means that money is coming from somewhere else. That means that there is a relationship between that income growth and my poverty. That's how we have to start thinking about this. You know, you get a corporation like Walmart or Boeing or Verizon or fill in the blank that's not paying any taxes, that money has to come from somewhere. And you know where it comes from? It comes from people like you and I, people like me who have to pay more in interest rates for my student loans to compensate for the gap, people like you that have to pay subsidies for interest rate subsidies to banks. We're to the point now where in America, 3 cents out of every dollar paid to the federal government in taxes goes right to the banks. Now, isn't that nice? Isn't that a great deal? Isn't that just something that's so beneficial to our society? We're lending these banks, we're subsidizing these banks to the tunes of probably hundreds of billions of dollars each year, and they're turning around and using our money to gamble and create this volatile economic system, this volatile financial system that inevitably busts and allows their backers and they themselves to structurally adjust this country. In the end, we all pay for it. And this is why, you know, David K. Johnson in his book talks about the nation which is ignoring income inequality. Again, we don't have a discussion on income inequality in America. All right, we have Paul Ryan, the Republican Party, and their interests in control no matter who's in the White House. I've said this before, elections have been nullified. It doesn't make a difference who runs. It doesn't make a difference who wins. It's always the business interests that are served first. You know, when Noam Chomsky said that we don't have two political parties, we have one political party, two factions of one party, the business party. You've got Democrats and Republicans that are indistinguishable on core issues, on issues that affect the bottom line. They're indistinguishable. So it doesn't matter. Who the hell cares who wins in 2016? How in the world can I be mad at a Republican or a Democrat when the system that they uphold is corrupted, is invalid, is not working? You can't. So that's why I don't focus on, oh, this politician said that, or this bill is coming through difference. We have to be mad and angry at the system. And as Brad Hallhut said on this radio show, host of Pinko the Bear Radio, good friend of mine, we can either choose from reform or revolution. And in my mind, there is no revolution. I'm sorry, there is no reform. How can you reform a corrupt system? You know, how in the world, can you basically put a Band-Aid on a water leak or whatever? You can't. That's why no reforms will work, because, you know, let's look at workers' rights in America. Okay, let's look at labor. You know, as I chronicled, I think, on the last show, after the passage of the National Labor Relations, or the Wagner Act, in 1935, and corporations refused to follow the law, workers protested and ultimately won some concessions and, you know, made or established a truce between labor and capital, although, you know, that truce was short-lived with the passage of Taft-Hartley in 1947. But, workers went outside the law and ultimately, you know, created a new system, because after the 1920s, the Great Depression, there was an alternative to what we saw. It was in the form of unions. It was in the form of high taxation on the very wealthy, which Franklin Delano Roosevelt was applauded for. It was in the form of a massive state involvement in the economy. And, you know, we had decades. I mean, if you want to, you know, no economic system is perfect, but we had economic growth in America after World War II up until 1980. And some scholars call this the birth of the middle class, these decades, the decades after World War II. But ultimately, those who have the power to influence our law, change our law and create a system of control, labor control, will do so because it's not a fair equation. It's not a fair matchup. You know, workers do not own the means of production. Workers will never be able to have the influence that money has on our politicians because of the nature of the very system. So as long as we're, you know, fighting in this system, as long as we consent to tyranny, as Marquis Smith wrote a book about, as a matter of fact, it's called Consent to Tyranny, I believe, then nothing is going to change. Nothing is going to change. If we keep on accepting the assumptions, the fundamentals of our economy and our discussions, then, you know, nothing is going to change, which is why it's so important to support shows like this, because I don't give a crap about what's happening, you know, in the political theater, because it's all irrelevant, because nothing is going to change for you and I. This is our job. It's our job to raise awareness, and it's our job to build a movement so massive that the system has to change. We have to create a worker-owned America. And I'll tell you, you know what the sad part is, too, is that you look at these Tea Party people, okay? Again, most of whom are white, elderly individual, have racist ideas. Most of these people agree with what I'm saying, that the sentiment is there. The frustration is there. They've just been hijacked by the very forces that are harming them. They've been propagandized by the very forces, as I said at the top of the show, that are making sure that their paycheck is smaller every week and they're working more and more hours. Only they don't realize it. But they feel the same anger that we do. It's just not directed at the right people. And so the Occupy protests, which, you know, really don't exist anymore, and the Tea Party wave in 2010 are basically manifestations of the, you know, the same problems, the same discontent that we see with our country. And so I just think that we're going to get to a point where the pain is going to be so great, the problems with capitalism and the volatility of our finance industry is going to be so great that it's going to be impossible to continue with the current system. So I just, you know, but it all results from income inequality. You know, you could look at anything, okay? Look at, you know, for example, I'm not going to tell you where I work, but I work in a place where the only thing that the people that have the power care about is money. All they care about is profit. That's it. Okay? They don't care about anything else. They are unresponsive to the needs of workers. Okay? They could care less about whether or not people leave or whether or not people go. It's a major multinational corporation. And their idea is that there's going to be enough people in the labor supply to carry out the bare minimum functions of the organization to make sure that the organization maintains its huge profit margin, okay? And as a result of this, you know, you could say it's a cycle of disinvestment. Chuck Collins talks about how money is no longer allocated to, you know, keep up with maintenance, keep up with services and whatnot. Slightly different, but almost the same principle. And so as a result of that, as a result of you know, this organization and its race to the bottom line, its indifference to workers, you know, its indifference to the needs of workers and everything, the whole system is basically collapsing, okay? People are getting hurt in this area. You know, people that come in, customers getting hurt. Employees are leaving. All the other problems associated with this, you know, health problems, financial problems, all the ills of capitalism, you know, can be illustrated in my work environment. Okay, you know, because there's not an investment, because there's a race to the bottom line, and because, you know, there's just an apathy to the sequence of life, you have results that I'm describing. That you know, this is what inevitably happens when, you know, you have a system in which the only thing that is valued is money, and however you get to the point where you can make more money, that's acceptable, and you don't invest in the system, you don't take care of the people that are ultimately providing you all this money, at the end of the day, you have a system in which I'm describing. And this fits with the United States of America. This explains why this country is a disaster. This explains why we have the highest prison population. This explains why we have the highest rate of infant mortality. This explains why we have the highest murder rate. We have the highest suicide rate. The highest fill in the blank. It's because we have an economic system rules out caring about the life sequence, you know, someone's human development, in favor of the sequence of money. The movement of money is more important than the movement of human beings, the development of human beings. And as a result of that, every life form in America is in decline. And this is what happens. Now, this is the United States of America. This is what happens when income inequality becomes the norm, where you've got 1% of the population that owns 25% of the income or makes 25% of the income and owns half of the wealth. This is the norm. This is the acceptable outcome. This is good. This is the free market at work. And anybody that tries to encourage analysis of this is marginalized to the fringes. And this is what happens. So it should be no surprise that we have a country in which we do, where if you look at major cities in America, you look at the prison population, the volatility in the workplace in terms of violence and everything, you can go down the line. There was a book written about this called Spirit Level by Dr. Pinkerton or Wilkinson, but look at the spirit level. I may get that. It describes in great detail what happens when you lived in a very unequal society. You get all the problems that I'm speaking about. I mean, it's just, you know, I don't think people can really understand this, and there's a deliberate attempt in the corporate media to make people not understand this, but, you know, I'll just use yourself as an example, okay? If you're like myself, who has virtually no money, okay, and no insurance, and barely a vehicle to drive around in, if you lose your job or some other set of circumstances occur, what's going to happen in your life? How is that going to affect your life? well, it's going to have a dramatically bad effect on your life. And if you have no family to live with, then guess what? You're out of luck. You may end up on the street robbing people, doing whatever you have to do to survive because of the forces of nature. You know, you don't eat, you don't have money, then your body's going to react. You don't have a roof over your head, your body's going to react. These forces of nature will force you to act in one way or another. And that, you know, affects society. And then you put, you know, half of the country in that predicament, then surprise, surprise, this is what you have. All right? This is the system in which they have created and we live in. And it's really wrong. All right, we're going to take a brief time out here. We'll be right back here on Carson's Corner. We've got Dan Quinn coming up in just a few moments, folks.
This is an important message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. As the cleanup process begins after a natural disaster, there may be areas of flooding. Constantly watch your children to prevent playing in or around water. It doesn't take long and it doesn't take much water for young children.
Get over here!
Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vultures Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
All right, we're back here on Carson's Corner in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. I want to encourage you to visit the Commons Project Network for great independent media analysis out there, individuals that have a lot in common with myself, Bob Carson. That's what's great about it. You know, not corporate sponsored, not corporate owned, okay? We tell you the truth, really, as we see it. And you look at the situation in Russia right now or in the Ukraine, where Putin is trying to stop the fascist neoliberal forces from taking over. And you know, if you poll the American people right now and ask them if they support, you know, the United States of America, or they support Vladimir Putin and whatnot, you'll see that probably 70 or 80% of the American population are against the actions of Vladimir Putin, without understanding the context of the situation. Why is this happening? You know, what is Vladimir Putin doing? You know, it's just unfortunate, because this is the way our this goes back to the propaganda model, where this is how the story, the news is presented to Americans, and this is how opinions are shaped in this country. You know, to the point where there's nobody representing the opposite point of view. There's no the sourcing, the vested interests when it comes to military action is staggering here. And as I've said before, this is where this country is going. You could see this right now, where in another week or so, we'll be talking about escalating our involvement. We already basically overthrew this government, and we put in place fascist right-wing individuals. You know, I would ask you folks, what would happen? What would happen if the protesters were labor activists? What would happen if they were union organizers or people that maybe they're communists? What would happen then? Would our media be chomping at the bit to defend them and install a government of their people? Would we receive the same coverage that we're receiving on this incident or with this this so-called crisis? I don't think so, folks. I think that the situation in Ukraine, the uprising benefits the capital owners, benefits the special interests, and Putin, who is fighting oligarchs in his country, you know, fighting the expansion of free trade agreements that have really taken our and many countries' economic sovereignty away. I think it would be much, much different. I really do. But again, we can't ignore the structure of the media. We can't ignore the contradictions here, where, you know, corporations like Westinghouse and General Electric and Disney all have money invested in the defense industry and would all make money on multiple ends if this were to, even if the United States doesn't get involved with this conflict. They're going to make money either way. They are. You'll see a ramping of defense spending. You'll see media coverage increasing the ratings to these cable news stations, and that allows them to charge more for advertising. I mean, you know, just like I said, they'll make money on multiple fronts, and it just goes to show you, folks, it really is the power of propaganda out there. And I hope that you're kind of looking at this with a great amount of skepticism. But I'm telling you, we're gearing towards another Cold War. If you pick up a corporate media newspaper or magazine, you'll see mentions of the Cold War many, many times. You know, so this is where we're at here in America. And guess who's going to pay for it? Guess who's going to pay for it? It's going to be you and me. We're going to pay for it. We're going to pay for this upcoming war. Take my word for it. We're going to have to privatize Social Security. We're going to have to privatize Medicare. Privatize this, that. Sell your watch. Sell your car to the corporation. You have to just forfeit your possessions to these greedy bastards who, you know, are could care less about any form of human life, except maybe their immediate family members. It's unbelievable. But that's what's happening. Get ready, because you know if this actually occurs under a Democratic president, if President Obama decides to up the ante and provide some sort of assistance to America and whatnot, you know that as soon as the other fascist party, the other faction of the business party is in power, the Republican Party, that they're going to, you know, demand that there be structural adjustment to pay for these efforts. That's what always happens. We're still paying for Ronald Reagan's defense spending. You know, we're still paying for his corporate giveaways. We're still paying for George W. Bush's war. See, this is how America works here, folks. All right. Without further ado, I just want to tell you, my good friend Justin Harvey released a show with Sarah McMahon. I'm not sure his YouTube channel, but you can go to my Facebook page at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA, and you can listen to that interview with Sarah McMahon, a former silver medalist and recent title challenger to Ronda Rousey, who lost last month in a disgraceful stoppage on the part of Herb Dean. Very, very good interview. Sarah is a very, very good person. She really sounds like a very down-to-earth person, someone who's dealt with a lot of tragedy in her life. And we're definitely a big fan of hers. So I encourage you to check that out. I also encourage you to friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. And you could follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And make sure to like us on Facebook. Like the Carson's Corner Facebook page at facebook.com/Carson's Corner 13. Now, here's Dan Quinn. This is an update we had with Dan on March 10th. And Dan is actually being transferred out of the Napa State Hospital back to the Sacramento County Jail, which is not good. But Dan wants to fight the charges against him, and he wants to try to prove his innocence. So this is the next step. So we're going to end the show with this, the Dan Quinn update from the Napa Valley Hospital. And we'll be speaking with Dan sometime in the future from Sacramento County Jail. So without further ado, here is Dan Quinn. Dan?
Dan, he's coming right now. Hold on, we're grabbing.
Thank you.
Hello.
Dan?
Bob Carson.
Hey, did you just try to call?
Yeah. I called hung up, so you can call me back, so I'm not spending money.
Well, here's the thing. That number that you called from, they would not allow me to get in touch with you. They said I'd have to call a special number if I was law enforcement. So I called the first number that you called me from, the payphone, and I guess that's the number I should call from now on.
Yeah. I always call this number. Like, I'll call you, and
then
it'll ring, it'll come up, I'll hang up, and you call back.
Perfect. All right, I got a half hour or so.
Oh, fantastic, yeah. Well, it's, what's the date today?
The 10th.
Well, I'm good to go home, man. I've been cleared, I'm sane. That was on my 14th day here. Okay, so it's Monday now. So last Wednesday, I was told after my interview with the forensic psychologist or psychiatrist that, I'm sane, good to go. I was never questioning my sanity. You know, I said a lot of things that are, you know, to some people a little out there, but fact is, if Bill Gates said what I've said with his money, people would be like, oh, really? That's cool. And the fact that stevia turns water into a liquid that does Bob Johnson's miracle, does the peachy miracle, you know, makes it so I'm lean and fucking looking like I did. I mean, when I was 205 pounds, Bob, when I was at my leanest, okay, like when I was fighting, you know, Rick Lardell, I was looking pretty good, don't you think? I mean,
yes.
From a heterosexual point of view, you know?
Absolutely. Dan, let me just ask you one question. When you say you're clear to go home, that means free from jail?
When I say clear to go home, I'm good to go back to court.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm sane for trial, for taking a deal, whatever, you know? I want to get out ASAP. If I'm not out, there's really nobody that's furthering the the stevia program, although I did bring up with my sons, I was watching my youngest son, this was a couple of years ago, yeah, it was 3 years ago, as a matter of fact, play freshman football, and I won the 50-50 drawing, right? You know, when you buy a lotto ticket and then you split half the proceeds with the school. And it was funny because my ex comes up. She goes, you know, you should share some of that with your kids. And it's like, it's already done, girl. You know, I gave them a third, you know, because with the Quinn Trio. And if I'm not mistaken, a Nobel Prize is a $300,000 award or gift or whatever, how they stipulate it. Is that correct, Bob? 300 grand for a Nobel Prize? Have you heard that?
I have no idea. It's entirely possible.
Yeah, and so I told my sons that, and my oldest was like, he was thinking about that, you know, a little incentive, like where that money's going to go. Because I don't need that much to get stevia famous. I'd be good with just a teeny bit, you know. Put it like this. In America, there's so many, everything is a gimmick. Everything is a scam. People are fucking so afraid to spend their money, and they're thinking that stevia sounds too good to be true, but it meets all the criteria for what would mythically be thought of as manna from heaven, you know. Use it as a sugar, use it as a sweet, and it banishes all the fat in your body, banishes my uncle's tumors, banishes diabetes, banishes the cancer that was developing. And there was a kid from, I can't remember his name, but he said his grandpa, they lived near Michigan, and said his grandpa's colon cancer, you know, vanished, and he actually told me, if this is true or not, that remember me telling you, he said that he went to Moeller High School in, actually, Ohio. He went to Moeller High School, and that his grandpa had cancer, colon cancer, stevia cured it. He also said that Jerry Faust had talked to him at one of their pep rallies and said some good things about me. He said I was one of the best athletes that he'd ever recruited, you know. And I think, Bob, that in America, sports heroes are listened to as if they're gods. What do you think? Am I right or wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. And I got to ask you, are you happy to leave the facility, the Napa Hospital that you're at now, or do you think it's going to be more difficult going back to Sacramento County Jail?
Napa State Hospital, I'll tell you what, it was surprisingly positive. I was thinking, you know, I've seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Jack Nicholson, and I was thinking, wow, good thing that they don't allow, you know, lobotomies anymore, because the way that the judge laid it down, he was like, you know what, you're a danger to yourself, a danger to others, and if you don't accept the medication that they're going to fucking force on you there, they're going to strap you down, basically, you know, you're going to have to take it. And I was thinking, oh my fucking God. But it wasn't like that at all. You know, they saw the sanity in me. I had my mock trial, passed with flying colors, had my interview with a forensic psychologist, and that went well, and learned the same day, last Wednesday, that it's good to go. You know, I'm on my way out. Jail compared to Napa State Hospital, jail is like torture. And this place, you know, they do it pretty good. Nothing's perfect, okay? As a matter of fact, I got the A-OK from people on my floor, and my mom over the phone from the hierarchy at Napa State Hospital got the A-OK to have stevia sent in. So this is how fucked up things can get, because she ordered 1 pound and Alan at Emperor Zoologist sent and charged her 2 pounds, a full kilo, okay? That's no big deal. But it was denied. It was a threat to security, they're saying, okay, at Napa State Hospital. I don't really understand that, since the three sugars that they provide for lunch and dinner, or and breakfast too, in the cafeteria, one is regular sugar, okay, everybody knows that causes obesity and diabetes. The second one is the blue, and that's aspartame, and that's outlawed in Europe and Japan because it burns holes in your brain. And three is the pink one that I like. It's actually sucralose, which can't be good for you. I'm sure that enough of it over a period of time is going to do some bad shit. But for them to say that stevia is a threat, stevia is the only healthy alternative, really. Actually, there's another healthy alternative, like sorbitol, I think. You ever heard of that?
No.
Okay, I think that's healthy, and that's actually natural. But stevia, you know, it's good to go, and they're denying it. So, you know, it is what it is. You know,
it's,
I mean,
it sucks. It's because, you know, on the one hand, it's you want to get out of there to proceed with your trial, your case. But on the other hand, you're going to be in that fucking, you know, that county jail where it's going to be very, very restrictive in terms of food and all that stuff.
Yeah, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you know, Sac County, I'll tell you what, one thing that I have not, they feed you well at Napa State Hospital to the point where I haven't been hungry any night that I've been here. But because I was, you know, people are creatures of habit. And at Sac County, I was so used to being hungry that I ordered, you know, soups, you know, because I thought I was going to be hungry here too. And that's not the case. So, you know, with a little sugar and seasoning, I made sweet and sour, you know, desserts, you know, for in the mealtime. It's all good. Yeah, I met some really cool people here. There definitely are some people that need to be here. Like, I have vegetable to my right now, as a matter of fact, and it's that, you know what I'm saying? I mean, well, who knows? Probably something in his youth growing up, okay? People get broken, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing, you know, how they're trying to limit abortions and they're trying to actually make birth control a bad thing, either, you know, from religion, you know, society. But when people are born, our society doesn't do much to protect them when they're growing up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing, really. Is there, Bob?
No.
I mean, I guess if you have bruises, you know, on you when you go to school, okay, but there's a lot of psychological damage, people getting broken. And again, I think it would be a fantastic idea for somebody that's rich, and they make movies about shit all the time that really is bullshit, and they make money, to have a crew going around to people that are child molesters, child rapists, child pedophiles, you know, that prey on children and women too, and to show a group of dudes that are like scuba suited, being rains, okay, going to work with a pair of pliers and a blowtorch and delivering excruciating fucking pain to, you know, these guys that are duct tape, you know, put it on YouTube, it'll get taken down, but enough people will see it and it'll start getting passed around, right? And that will set the table for copycats. And now a question, Bob, if that actually happened, don't you think there might be a good chance that that might actually curb crimes against children?
Well, you're talking about, like, punitive measures and everything?
Well, I'm talking about getting dudes off of Craigslist, okay, guys that fucking fuck kids up and basically get slapped on the wrist and get away with it, you know? Okay, the guys that are kicked out of prison to make room for nonviolent white powder, you know, substance abusers. And,
Yeah, I would favor that. I think that that's a crime that is worse than terrorism. And, you know, when it comes to that, we want to be protective of somebody's rights and the Constitution, so on and so forth. But the reality is that there's no these people are monsters, and we should treat them in the most harsh ways. Many states have mandatory minimums, mandatory life sentences for crimes like this, and I agree with the most punitive measures that are available.
Yeah, you know, they have, you know, it's amazing. They slap the hands of people that commit. That's like social terrorism, okay?
You want to hear something messed up, Dan? There was a guy who killed 7 people in Chicago. This is during a fast food robbery. Him and his partner killed 7 people and stuffed them in a friggin' freezer. And today he just received a $450,000 settlement because he was punched in the face by a correctional officer when they were taking him to jail. Now,
wow.
It's unbelievable, but this is unfortunately what happens sometimes.
Well, you know what? To the attorney that got that settlement, he should contact Dan Quinn because, back not fiction, I was handcuffed, I was safely secured, I was on my face, I was no threat, and officers Warren, Nelson, and Hernandez, Sacramento County Sheriff, they pull my arms up behind my back so viciously, so hard, and so long that they tore my shit. And if it wasn't for Stevie and Weed basically killing pain, I still felt excruciating pain, but was able to handle that without crying out for joy. I mean, not joy, you know, crying out in agony, you know, in despair. If I had done that, they probably would have charged me with a crime to cover their asses. They didn't. And it's a slam dunk, okay? And maybe I shouldn't be saying that on the phone. I've heard that the phones here are actually tapped, and they're listening, okay, and things that you say can be held against you. But, you know, yeah, in fact, I got a slam dunk police brutality suit against the Sacramento County Sheriff. Will that ever come to fruition? Who knows? It's really not nearly as important as the stevia curing the human body miracle getting famous. If I could choose one or the other, you know, back in the day, you know, male testosterone, you know, getting angry, cutting off your nose to spite your face, I might actually pursue one over the other. But I'm all about getting out, getting stevia famous ASAP so it can start to actually do some good.
Yeah, absolutely. And that so it's been, since you've been locked up, you haven't had any opportunity to take stevia. You almost got it approved through the Napa State Hospital, but, you know, now it's like you're back to square one.
Well, yeah. All the doctors here okayed it, all the staff okayed it, but the state police, you know, they disallowed it. And, you know, I'm wondering, what do the state police know that I don't know or anybody else doesn't know? Are they going off the fact that it actually acts like a stimulant? The fact is I couldn't just administer it to myself. It'd be under lock and key, and then, you know, by the time I access it, I'd have a thing of water. I'd take, you know, scoops, put it in there, shake it up, and then it just acts like a sugar. You know, you can't put it in your lip, you know, it gets spun out. But, yeah, that's who's about down the road. Yeah, anybody out there that's listening, and you like Bill Murray? I saw Bill Murray on the Oscars. Did you watch the Oscars, Bob?
No.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I saw Bill Murray, and I walked through, and I saw Bill Murray, and his face looked splashed as fuck, okay? And I'm like, oh, wow, he looks old as fuck. And then I saw him again, and they had put the makeup crew on. You know, he looked, you know, a little shot out, but, you know, not nearly as bad. So I think the first time that Bill got up there, someone made a mistake and hadn't actually, you know, touched him up with makeup, and he looked shot the fuck out. I'm sure half those stars wouldn't look nearly as good if they didn't have makeup, okay, which kind of sets a skewed tone for the rest of the world. You know, how many women across America are feeling like shit about themselves because they see these twiggy thin, beautiful women, you know, on TV and in magazines, and it sets a really unhealthy bar, you know, to keep up with it.
Well, you know what, bordering on that, Dan, the number one health problem for teenage girls in our schools nowadays is supposedly a bulimia.
Wow, yeah. And a stevia diet, you know, I mean, they put, look on anything you eat, even in bread, everything you buy has sugar in it, okay? We're eating tons and tons of sugar. And the fact is, the rich know that it's unhealthy, but the rich own the factories that make the food, they have interest or outright own the facilities that, you know, like the AMA, they got them in their back pocket, you know. Stevie would put a lot of people out of business, but it would save a lot of lives. And, you know, what's more important, you know?
You know, I just posted, people are responding on Facebook already. I just posted that Napa State Hospital approved stevia, but the state police rejected it, which is very, very interesting and whatnot. Dan, how are you physically now? You're going to go back to Sacramento County, but, you know, physically, I know that you said that you were starting to feel some effects from being incarcerated for so long.
Well, yeah, you know, I played a game of 2-on-2 basketball 3 or 4 days ago. And I'm sore as a motherfucker. And I was doing, I mean, I took 2 weeks off. When I got to Napa State Hospital, I didn't do anything until the second. I got here on Wednesday, and then Wednesday number two, you know, was the day that I heard the good news. And that's not the first day that I played basketball, but I, before, when I was in Sac County, I was doing 500 sumo squats every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and then throwing a lot of punches in my cell. So, I mean, I was doing as much working out as you can get in a cell, but I'm sore as fuck. We played I was defending a guy that played high school basketball at Skyline in Oakland, okay? He's a white boy, but he was kicking it with brothers there. You know what I'm saying? He can hoop it up. And I'm sore, man. I'm feeling like I'm feeling 46, and I never felt like that when I was on Stevie and weed. So,
yeah.
You know, fact is, nature is good, and what the rich do is they have a war on nature all across the board. I mean, why is marijuana illegal, but Marinol is legal? Okay, a chemical replacement for THC, that doesn't make any sense, okay? But that right there, that pretty much epitomizes what's wrong with the United States and DMV, okay, the world, you know? I mean, big lighters, one-time use, and then for the next 10,000 years, they're going to sit in a dump and they're going to make this planet more toxic, more decay, okay, more sickness, more death, you know? They can make plastic out of hemp. I'm right about that, aren't I?
Yeah,
they can make, I mean, I think they wrote the Declaration of Independence on hemp, hence the fact that it's stayed around. It's natural. From what I heard, George Washington used to smoke hemp. Okay, yeah, I bet you he got high. I bet you it was all good, okay? I'm wondering if they actually had the Founding Fathers, if they had any idea how bad I was going to get. And the majority of me wants to say, yeah, they probably had a plan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
For this country. Yeah. It is what it is. We need a revolution, Bob. It can never be accomplished with guns because the rich own too much. But it can be accomplished financially, economically. And people don't realize, you know, if you're out there and you're hating on me, you're probably a fucking slave, okay? 99% of the population is. And, you know, that means that from the time you're born to the time you die, you got to run on your little treadmill, pay your fucking rent, pay your taxes, you know what I'm saying? Basically, isn't it true, Bob, that if you don't get enough rest, if you don't get enough sleep, it increases the chances that your body is going to fail, you're going to get sick, and you're going to wind up in a really, really bad, bad place.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah. It's true. I just read an article that said 27 to 31 trillion is parked in offshore accounts, like in the Cayman Islands. And that's, I think, the United States alone, okay? That's money. That's profit, okay? That means that there's more than enough money to go around. They could probably pay two people for every job, right, the same wage and work half-time, okay? Make life a lot better, you know what I'm saying? But it is what it is, you know? I know for a fact that somebody's going to make a lot of money off pure H2O. Hopefully it's me, all right? Liquid that makes it so you don't have body odor for 4 to 5 days without showering, okay? Right. That might actually come in handy if the drought gets worse and worse. What do you think, Bob?
Yes.
Okay, since the last time we talked, have you Google searched petroleum gasoline's chemical composition?
Yeah, I actually Googled it while I was on the phone with you that one time, yep.
Okay, I have short-term memory loss. That happens. I mean, Bon Lapua's right hand, that took a lot out. But you see all those hydrogens in there, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, don't you think it's safe to say that the vast majority of America and the world actually thinks that it's fossil fuel that powers engines?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think people are going to get a little pissed when they figure out that they've been spending $4 plus for...
Mr. Hall, and Mr. Webster, the nursing officer, Mr. Hall, and Mr. Webster.
$4 plus for flammable, $4 a gallon for water that's flammable, okay, you know, and we smoke it into toxic dust that's creating more problems, you know, in the environment, and, the California drought, I mean, that's ridiculous. We've had so much global warming, it shouldn't be a problem. There should be an abundance of water, Al Gore's. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm going around.
It was Dr. King that said that the Earth is comprised of 3/4 of water, but yet we receive water bills every month.
We're charged for water, okay? It's going to continue to get worse and worse. And the fact is, internal combustion engines are vaporizing water and to power, and then it's gone. It's dust. It's what's causing people to get more sick. You know, I mean, with all these supposed quote-unquote breakthroughs in health technology, people shouldn't be getting as sick as they are. But I'll tell you what, I'm noticing more and more, like, brain cancer, brain tumors. Have you noticed a spike in that?
I'm not sure of the data, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, well, you know, you know what my data is? When I read the paper and I see that, you know, famous person X, famous person B, you know, getting brain tumors. All right, gentlemen, where are you going? Good luck on that. Yeah, there's some really, really cool guys there. And
I'm kind of sad to see you go, because the Sacramento County Jail, it's going to be more difficult for us to do these interviews, and I know that the treatment there is going to be is just, you know, much more difficult. But I mean, it's like, you know, what are they? Have you spoken to your mother about the writ of habeas corpus?
Yeah, but you know what? I don't really want to get into that. It's going to be more time. Again, it would be taken away from getting Stevie famous. All right, me fighting my case. You know, what's more important? You know, curing cancer, down the road winning a Nobel Prize, or, you know, standing my ground on a case that may or may not win. You know what I'm saying? You know?
Yeah.
It is what it is. You know, 18 months ago, you know, I was rip-roaring, you know, to go, okay, to get this in court, get it done, handle my business. But I think a combination of me calling my first attorney a cunt and saying you get what you pay for, you know, that didn't help in this situation where I'm at now. You feel me?
Yep.
You know, it is what it is. You know, sometimes people are walking up and down the hallway where I can't, you know. You know, I think that my first attorney should have had somebody play the violin on her, and when she felt orgasm after orgasm after orgasm, like, oh my God, you know what? He might be onto something here. Yeah, it is what it is. Basically, I've been sentenced to live in a country that is inundated with a fluoride level that I read that there's actually more fluoride in our water supply than, you know, would turn the Jews into docile cattle, you know, on their way to the ovens and shit. And people are thinking that 9/11, I mean, I put it like this. When we do these little interviews, okay, this is like a cast. I'm fishing, okay? This is a cast of a lure. If I say some of the same shit, and some of the people out there are going, you know what, he says the same shit over and over, it might be because of George Clooney or a Bill Murray. You know, somebody actually contacts them and says, look, you know what, Dan Quinn says he likes you guys, okay? He would like to meet you, you know, on a personal level once he gets famous, okay, because he discovered Stevie Cures, he discovered the violin is the fountain of orgasm for women. That's not going to generate any money. Unless we made a movie, Aaron Brink, okay, the Lesbian Oral Olympics, okay, it could be a comedy, all right? And, I mean, don't you think it would be kind of funny that we have the Lesbian Oral Olympics, and until lesbians actually up their oral game to the violin, okay, technique, they don't place. They don't take gold, silver, or bronze, and it's meh. Okay, but see, they could actually nominate me for like a honorary lesbian status. Okay, because you know what, I fucking hate most men.
Hey, Dan, we got a guy on Facebook. Do you ever recall seeing a Show My Dad video?
My dad video.
Yeah, some guy named Antonio Gabriel Velada. He's an attorney in Texas, who's a fan of yours, following you, and he said that he just texted me, Bob Carson show my dad a video. Maybe he can help. Maybe he's talking about his father. Maybe his father is an attorney. Let me clarify this.
You know what? I don't remember. I have even when I was at Notre Dame, okay, you know, I mean, I guess I had suffered a little head trauma. I had one concussion. Tom Kalmeyer, ex-head coach, was it, at San Diego State? Maybe just a position coach there. But I think Tommy's coaching in the NFL now. And we played, I'll tell you what, we had a good football team. We had a really good football team. Tom Kalmeyer made it to the pros. He was a defensive back, good player. Tommy Kalmeyer, remember that time when I made a tackle and you came diving over the top, showboating, and you kneed me in the back of the fucking head and I caught a concussion? And that's the only time in football that I ever had a concussion, all right? It's like this, Tom. Please, look into stevia, all right? It's going to make you look younger. It's going to preserve your health. You're going to kick yourself in the ass for not getting out of stevia's program, all right, down the road when it's validated. And, you know, I mean, for the fact that, like this, Bob, my sophomore year in high school, I started on varsity, okay, football, all right? It's a rarity, okay? It happens. Travis Knox, that went to USC, he started on varsity, too, as a sophomore. And when we're having this big, it was a, what do you call it, when you go in front of the student body, it was a big something, it was a big deal, okay? They were having a football rally, all right? And I got mentioned, Dan Quinn, and Tom Kalmeyer, from what I hear, led the chorus of boos, okay, from, the, you know, supposedly my friends. But it's like this, Tommy, you know what, theoretically, if I got rich, okay, and I had a lot of money and I was doing a lot of good, I don't think people would actually give a flying fuck if I attacked your mom and dad with money. I mean, from the fact that his mom was Japanese, I believe, and his dad was German, okay, and I think Tommy turning out a spectacular athlete. I think that don't be spitting like that. Go on, take it somewhere else, homeboy. Seriously, kick rocks. Yeah. God, man, the fucking vegetable. Anyhow, my theory is that when different races breed, I think the best comes out most times. Okay, you know, yeah. Black and white, look at OJ's kids. Look fantastic, you know. They're probably going through it. Anyhow, two Axis powers, the Germans and the Japanese, Tommy Kalmeyer. You know what? If I decided to actually use money to fuck your shit up, homeboy, I could do it. But I really wouldn't want to be a much better story for Tom Kalmeyer and people in the NFL. Oh, you know what? Okay, you know, I'm getting off topic. But Russ Purnell, okay, Bob Carson. You've seen the play, right?
Yes.
Okay, if I'm in Cardinal and Gold at USC, be a critic on the statement. I think that if I'm wearing Cardinal and Gold and I make the play at USC, that I'm on the cover of Sports Illustrated and I'm nominated for a Buckus Award. What do you think?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Russ Purnell, if it's not for you, okay, I'm at USC. And if it's not for you, I don't have my kids, so, you know, it's kind of like, you know, how far do I go on this? Fact or fiction, Russ Purnell was like a fucking movie star, okay? Russ Purnell would be a prime candidate to start using a pound of stevia a month because he looks shot the fuck out now, okay? He looks like an old man. And when Russ recruited me, he could have been a movie star. He was just as good looking as George Clooney. I mean, that ballpark, you feel me? Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen pictures of him, but Russ, you know what? Wouldn't it be a tragedy if, in fact, you did give me a job, all right, and the message for wherever I was supposed to work got somehow lost, all right, and so you did your job, but I got pissed off because I didn't think you got me a job, and I left. I was pissed, man. It's a good thing that Russ didn't come to my house because this actually ran through my head. I don't know if I ever said this before, but I've been thinking just a little bit about, you know, taking my shit boxing, you know, because as a puncher, man, when I was mad, they told a lot of stories, you know what I'm saying? I knocked a lot of motherfuckers out when I was mad. It was always when I was mad. I'm an anger-based fighter. But I had been thinking about leaving football for boxing, and if Russ Purnell had come to my home in that period when he didn't give me a job at, you know, for USC, I was thinking about beating him to death and, you know, using temporary insanity, hopefully getting out in a couple of years. And by the time that I did get out, taking my shit boxing, the fact that I beat his ass to death would have generated more money in my first fight than probably most Olympians get, you know, even at their first fight pro after they won a gold medal. You feel me?
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of different things we could have made. But, yeah, Russ getting on stevia, he'd be the if I could choose one person, seriously, to get on a pound of stevia a month to actually show what it does, it'd be Russ Fennell, because he looked like a fucking movie star. He's a handsome guy. He looks shot the fuck out now. And, you know, it is what it is. Do that,
yeah,
Russ.
I got to kind of wrap it up here. Just one more thing here I just want to get into before wrap it up. I want to tell you that this guy I told you about on Facebook is going to show your case to his father, who's an attorney, who may be able to give you an attorney to look into the TMZ thing and the treatment that you've received on the part of the Sacramento County Jail officials. And also, too, when are you actually going back to Sacramento County Jail?
Well, you know, they said generally, Scott, here's a question. From when you guys told me that I would pass AOK, I'm saying I'm going back, isn't it generally 2 weeks, give or take? Yeah, okay, Scott says something like that, 2 weeks, and I heard last Wednesday, you know, so give or take, you know,
okay.
Maybe not 2 days from now, but the Wednesday, you know, whether that be 7 days from now or 9 days from now, yeah.
All right.
Until 9 days.
Okay. Well, let's touch base again. Like I said, I'll let you know if I hear back from this guy or that documentary filmmaker that wants to do a film on you. I haven't heard.
Fantastic.
You know, but I'll keep you updated, Dan, and I'll give you a call back whenever I'm home, and we can record and everything.
Thank you, Bob Carson. And for everybody out there that's a fan, you know what? Keep the faith. Contact Bill Murray. Contact Madonna. Contact, Christina Aguilera. Oh, wow. I mean, she's married. She's fine. She's off the market. But if Christina Aguilera actually felt the orgasms from the violin, the fountain of orgasm, and spread that like on Facebook, the female fountain of orgasm would be globally famous within what? 3 days, a month, a week, a month? What do you think, Bob?
Yes.
Immediately. And George Clooney, and especially Bill Murray. All these stars that used to look good when I was growing up and they're looking shot the fuck out, they're going to kick themselves in the ass for not drinking really sweet stevia water. You know, it is what it is. I'm going to win a Nobel Prize for my discovery. Hopefully, I'm young enough and I'm still alive, right? Anyway, okay, to take advantage of it, okay? But my kids, that are the most important thing, the next generation, I didn't have my kids to be slaves to me, okay? You know what? Like when I got my car from my grandma, okay, instead of keeping it for myself, you know what I did? I gave it to my boys so they could split it after they sold it financially so they could come up. That's how it should be done, right? Yeah. My boys are on the same program as I am. They know what I want. They know what I want done. I want money to be used for good and not evil, to spread it out, to make it so people actually aren't slaves. You know, there's a lot of money out there. And all people have to do is, I mean, Michael Jordan and Oprah could actually start a company right now that did it just like Walmart, just like McDonald's, just like any big corporation that you can think of, but instead of spending all the money to the top, right? What do you think, Bob? 95% of profit goes out to a few who already have more than enough and don't really need it or deserve it. Isn't that right? Spreading it out so everybody has more than enough and to make life a better place for everybody. You know, that's my goal.
Well said, Dan. We'll leave it there. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you in a few days, brother.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob. God bless you, and I'll talk to you later.
All right,
peace out.